again by Connor O'Donnell.
Alright, thanks for having me back.
Oh, you're welcome, dude. We clashed so hard, we thought...
Oh, dude, that was
I didn't want him back.
Yeah. It was
it's not my decision.
We had to fight a little bit to get...
Me and Connor aren't friends anymore.
Yep.
Were we ever?
Yeah, that's a question I've been asking myself ever since last time. And the answer is no.
No.
So, fuck you.
Alright. Well, all right. Great way to start things off, Dan.
Yep.
Thanks. Nice.
You're welcome.
Alright. So, we went on a little date night, / we went at 11:45 in the morning. I think that was the earliest movie I've ever seen.
Oh.
Yeah, non-film festival movie.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, just the way our schedules matched up, we all saw it at that time, but we're going to review Sean Levy's date night later. But
okay, we'll get to it later, yeah.
Yeah, but first, let's talk some news. So, literally just a few hours ago.
Literally.
By the time you're listening to this podcast, it'll be days, but...
It's still burning hot.
Yeah, it'll be old news by the time you listen to this, but... Joss Whedon is directing The Avengers.
It's a final appreciation.
Wait, can you hear that? Because I think I just heard 1,000,000,000 comic book nerds, like, orgasm. Like
I think, yeah.
I agree.
Dude, on Twitter, it was crazy. When the news got announced, every single tweet was about that. Like, mostly positive. But
I don't know, I mean, I would like to make fun of it. Because of that reason, but I did love Serenity.
Oh, I do too.
So it's like one of those things.
It's kind of funny. That's the only film he's made is Serenity, and he's getting this huge. Like it's going to be a huge movie. Like,
absolutely.
Like we already know Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, and Samuel L. Jackson will be in it.
The Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah,
Chris, the perfect top, perfect getaway Hemsworth.
Yep, he gets top billing. And
whoa,
yeah, no, but yeah. So I mean, if you guys don't know Whedon. Who Whedon is by now, Firefly, Dollhouse, Buffy
first of all. Now, he didn't know, question, did he have anything to do with the Buffy movie? Did he write it?
I know how Buffy was a movie before it was a show. I'm pretty sure he did
pretty
not.
Sure he didn't, right?
Yeah.
Because it was Buffy, it was Luke Perry and someone else, and then it became the show. Yeah, but I've always wondered about that.
Connor, you read some few comic books here and there. Have you ever read The Astonishing X-Men? I've heard that's like incredible.
Yes, no, I haven't.
You know what though? I've watched a couple of the animated comics on Hulu that they have, and I think it's of that series. I could be wrong, but anyway, they're Joss Whedon wrote them, and they're very good. Actually, I really enjoy.
And I mean, he also wrote Planet.
That's right.
Which is
oh
awesome.
My god.
Which is
funny
because,
I love Titan.
And that's the thing. It's like Whedon seems to. I mean, granted, he's only made one movie, Serenity, but like, to me, Serenity, it's like a really awesome standalone sci fi film. I mean, I know it follows Firefly and there's that whole thing, but you don't. Like, when I watched Serenity, I hadn't seen anything about Firefly.
Right. I mean,
and like, I was in it.
It's
you know?
Literally.
Like, it
it's a literally Star Wars and Indiana Jones together. And I mean, and almost as enjoyable as both. Like, I mean, it's really...
It's a fun
I remember
fun
when I saw it in theaters, I could not believe how much fun I had. Like, I was amazed.
Yeah.
And so, maybe they can get Nathan Fillion to play, like, the Incredible Hulk in the Avengers.
That would be awesome. Well, yeah, I mean,
actually,
like,
Nathan Fillion wouldn't be a bad Bruce Banner.
Wouldn't be the worst. Yeah, certainly not. No.
And, I mean, I would rather see, you know, we didn't take over this than, like, Joe Johnston.
True.
Like,
yeah, true.
And even Jon Favreau was rumored, but he, you know, no, he's not.
That yeah, I mean, truthfully, I'd rather Jon Favreau go on to, I mean, Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Definitely, which we will talk about
we'll
in 5
there.
Seconds.
Oh. Now, 4, three.
Another side story. Josh Whedon, who co-wrote Cabin in the Woods, which was
got pushed back a year for 3D.
We now know that there will be. We know what the movie's about.
What is it about? Please tell us.
There was an interview with Amy Acker, who was one of the actresses in it, and she said, "There's a lot of scary monsters. It's a scary movie. It's about a cabin in the woods.
Ah, real monsters.
So yeah, no. So we didn't know
real.
If it was like a
real monsters."
Like what a
yeah.
So we now know.
Yeah.
He says it's kind of a straight formula of a horror movie, but I guess done really well. So I'd love to see that. That's what she said. That's what she said. A group of kids, young kids, who go away for a weekend.
Richard Jenkins.
Yeah, he must be like
that
I can't
makes
imagine.
Me feel instantly better
about the movie.
About the whole.
What
thing.
About Isn't that funny? He's gonna be in the Cabin in the Woods and Let Me In.
Oh, and guess
both done by like Cloverfield alums.
Yeah. And guess who's in the Cabin in the Woods? Chris Hemsworth.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, and wasn't
Bradley Whitford?
Oh, I was gonna say Bradley Whitford, but I was nervous because I didn't want people to be like, "What, Dan?"
it's getting a Cloverfield-esque release on January 14th.
Are they gonna have like the same viral kind of marketing?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess if there's a lot of monster movies, they could do that kind of like
Although I will say, if they're trying to do that kind of thing, they've already failed, because, I mean, a title like Cabin in the Woods is not nearly as intriguing as Cloverfield. Like, when...
Well, remember that Cloverfield didn't have a title when it was the hype.
Exactly, yeah.
It was the 1808 thing, so... Yeah. I'm pretty sure it wasn't supposed to be Cloverfield, but because people started just calling that on the web, they named it that.
They were gonna name it like the document number of whatever it was.
Right.
It was like, yeah,
but then I think because I don't know, like, yeah, that was their temporary thing, it caught on.
I love it. I mean, it's a good title.
Yeah.
Mysterious. All right. Well, we will keep you updated on that and the Avengers, which is supposed to come out in May 2012.
Right.
So
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
2013, I'd probably, I guess.
Just to be safe. And then it'll get pushed back 2 years for 3D.
By then it'll be 4D, whatever that means.
So, like Dan said, Jon Favreau's doing Cowboys and Aliens.
With Harrison Ford.
Yes. Now, we knew Daniel Craig and Olivia Wilde were in the picture, and now we know it's going to be Harrison Ford. So
now, who is Harrison Ford playing?
I assume it's going to be a cowboy, not an alien.
Why?
You know, we came in with a crystal skull, you never know.
Because
I thought that's when I did see Cowboys. And
oh!
You know, that's fine.
Indiana Jones isn't a cowboy.
He's halfway there. He's halfway there.
It's a whip.
I mean, look at the title. Look at the, if you go online on our store, you can see what the graphic novel looks like. And that's kind of Indiana Jones I've ever seen.
But so wait, who is, here's my question, though. Does it, like... And I'm sure someone can email us and tell us, or we could go online ourselves and kind of just read about the synopsis. But I mean, Daniel Craig, who's Daniel Craig playing? I imagine Olivia Wilde is a love interest.
Yeah.
So, like, who's Harrison Ford?
I mean,
it'd be great if Harrison Ford had, like, a 2-minute cameo. Like, and he was just, like, some curmudgeon in the saloon. Like, you cowboy.
Actually, that would be kind of nice to see Harrison Ford play, like,
yeah, but it would also be nice to see Harrison Ford in a movie. That's not extraordinary measures.
Exactly.
But, yeah, but that would be, a cameo would be nice, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's no details on anything of what, you know, who he's going to be, but that comes out next year. Supposedly 2011.
Yeah, I would love. Oh God, I hope. I mean, I can't wait for Morning Glory though, which looks really funny with J.J. Abrams produced it and Roger Mitchell, who Notting Hill. So
that's right. Yeah,
come on.
And that just got delayed till November.
And also Changing Lanes, Roger Mitchell.
Yeah, oh, I love it.
Very underrated decade movie. One of more of the decade. It was good.
It was really good.
Let's not get into an argument. It was really good. Very well written. Great performances. Roger Mitchell's a good director. I think
they're just gonna shoot in July. And maybe possibly 3D, like every movie that's coming out. So, all right. So,
except for Poor Player,
yeah, that's true.
Clearly,
all right. So, moving on, Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern, another superhero film. Now we know /film broke the exclusive that
broke it.
They broke it. They cracked
that story.
Cracked it.
That Ryan Reynolds will, if you go on set, you will not see him in his Green Lantern costume.
Why not, Jordan?
Because his costume is, it's going to be CG.
What does CG stand for?
A computer generated.
Oh.
No,
I've always acted like I knew. I didn't.
Seriously?
No.
Okay. No, he's going to wear a gray tracking motion performance capture shoe with LED lights. And his suit will be added 100% entirely in post-production. So I guess this could go terribly wrong.
I'll say.
It's definitely, you know, it's absolutely intriguing, but it could be one of those things that, like, I mean, even like, when I read that story, I was just kind of like, oh, well, they did it in Iron Man, but they only half did it in Iron Man. You know, because the other half was Stan Winston, God rest him, and his awesome team, you know, constructing the other half of the Iron Man suit. So doing something
Actually, question about that. So when exactly did they do CGI Iron Man? Just when it was transforming, essentially?
Yeah,
like when he was flying and all
that? Right.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, and, like, during the fights and all that. Like, which, and it looked good, but, like, to see, I mean, Hal Jordan, he doesn't wear a helmet. You know, if you're creating a character that is completely covered in some kind of suit, doing that all CG, okay, probably not the worst.
Also, another question. How does Hal Jordan... I've read nothing. I've known nothing of the Green Lantern except for his name and, like, the alien ring and all that. But how does Hal Jordan... His identity? How does he...
This is what Peter Serrato wrote this up. He said, remember, the Green Lantern suit is something that should look alien, needs to seem otherworldly, and encompasses any creature that wears the ring, and Hal Jordan is the first human to ever wear the suit. This was a chance for Dixon, who she's the costume designer. And she got the Academy Award for Lord of the Rings: Return of the King. So,
but no, but like, so and, is he, he's and, Hal Jordan, and then he becomes Green Lantern? Or
I think
it
it's
like,
he's known that he's.
So it's like an Iron Man.
Yeah, I remember reading. Also, a while back, it was right after Ryan Reynolds got cast, that apparently they don't want to make it so much of an origin story. Yeah. Like, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to, like, Mark Gamble doesn't want to do, like, a traditional origin story where you spend half
the time. I read that he wants to take the Hal Jordan character to the edge of darkness.
Yeah.
Right.
We can only,
right.
like, as a character. Yeah.
I actually think they're going to combine Danny Houston's missing scenes from Clash of the Titans and some of Mel Gibson scenes from Edge of Darkness, and then just throw Ryan Reynolds in, and that sounds like a movie.
Yeah. That sounds like a movie.
I mean, now with CG, like, what is this gonna, you know, how, and after Avatar, everyone said that.
Yeah, well, no, that's what I mean, though, because I think Avatar showed us that you could do it. I don't know. I mean, so I think, don't forget Lord of the Rings, this woman, right, what's her name?
I'm butchering that, Nigel Dixon.
Okay, so she was on Lord of the Rings, which was really, literally the first step, you know, with like Gollum and all that. I mean, I feel like it's a good employee.
I think the point is this, and which is why I'm really intrigued, is because seeing a human head, like seeing Ryan Reynolds' head on top of a fake body.
Well, I mean, you think when Neytiri was holding Sam Worthington, you didn't think that was really well done? I thought it was really
That's
well
different,
done.
Though. That's like two different... I mean, the same
well,
way...
Well, but I'm just saying, essentially, like, her arm and his head, I mean, I know that you can make that distinction.
But I know what kind of... He's going to be walking around.
Exactly.
Like,
he's going to be a moving person, you know,
right,
which...
No, yeah, totally.
I mean, I have all the... like you said, with Gollum and even Avatar and things like that, like, I have all the faith in the world in motion capture.
Right.
But I just think, like, combining the two... Because I'll say this, in Iron Man... Those moments, those like 2 seconds of footage where you just saw, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s face and the Iron Man suit, like it looked a little weird.
What, in the new clip from Iron Man 2 or
in either of them, it looks a little weird. So I feel like Martin Campbell might be like overestimating the. Or whoever's decision. I mean, I'm assuming it was ultimately his decision.
I mean, the WB source, or their source from WB said the suit will look cool. That was their source, so.
I'm sure it will.
They never do us wrong. And no. Look at last podcast for
permission of that.
Alright.
Clash of Titans did come out.
That's true.
Even though we all enjoyed it.
Alright, let's move on. Do you guys want to break Dawn or Andrew Niccol first?
I want to break Wind.
All right,
and then maybe okay, it's broken. Right. Now maybe we can let's break Dawn. We'll end
now we don't talk about Twilight too much on the podcast or the film stage,
even though we are huge fans. No,
that's not true.
I'm
but
a fan
but
of
after
breaking.
Reading after reading Devin Faraci's write up on Breaking Dawn, that's when I got kind of excited for the movie.
Honestly, even though he definitely adds character to the synopsis, if you go on Wikipedia and you read the synopsis, which I mean literally they break it down in the most objective way possible. even then, you're like, what happened?
But,
it's good.
But yeah, so they've been. We know that they've been trying to go for some high class directors for Breaking Dawn.
Yeah.
There was a report on April Fool's that Michael Mann was going. No,
I broke the story, the fake story that Michael Mann was going to break.
It turns out Dan wasn't right, and surprising.
It was a guess, like I said.
But Bill Dreamgirls Condon is going to be.
I love Okan.
He is in negotiations to possibly direct Breaking Dawn. Now, what do you guys feel about that?
I don't know. It's like it's one of those things where I feel like the director of these movies is kind of just I don't know, like Iron Hand, because Stephanie Meyer has so much control. Like we've known that from the beginning because of all the problems she had with Catherine Hardwick. Because obviously Catherine Hardwick, who's not a bad director herself, I mean, she gave us 13, which was a very sure-handed character study, right? So. That's a good director who kind of was clearly had some sort of vision that Stephanie Meyer didn't allow, you know. And obviously, Summit Entertainment has been very good about letting her literally call the shots. So I kind of find it funny that she didn't write them. Actually, like whoever the woman is who's adapting them, yeah, I think yeah. It's kind of interesting that Stephanie Meyer didn't do it herself. But anyway, and then like in you know who was it? Chris Weitz or Paul Weitz, one of the Weitz brothers.
I think
for the second one, I mean, also a solid director. I mean, he's been parts of good. He's been a significant part of films like About a Boy. You know what I mean? Ants. American Pie, like, you know, three completely different, but all very good films. Anyway, so it's just like, those are two directors, David Slade. And so that's why, like, when the David Slade announcement came out for about a second, I was like, oh, that's really interesting, because he's done a vampire movie that was pretty entertaining, 30 Days a Night, and, like, certainly very gory. But then, when I look back, you're like, well, I mean, not really, because, you know, if a Weitz brother and, you know, Catherine Hardwicke both can kind of be rendered useless, yeah. Than David Slade, you know, despite Hard Candy and 30 Days a Night will. And so the same goes for probably the best of the bunch, Bill Condon, who, I mean, Gods and Monsters, Kinsey, both are, like, underrated, I think, underrated masterpieces. I mean, both those films are great.
Yeah, I love
and
Kinsey. Then, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Kinsey's and, and I mean, Dreamgirls has moments that lag, but I mean, you know, Jennifer Hudson won an Oscar for God's sake, so it's like, you know, the man knows what he's doing.
It's weird. I mean, we saw Rob Marshall take over Pirates, and now possibly musical. You know,
exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, like Dan said, Breaking Dawn. There's a lot of really serious changes, you know, with that. It's kind of
yeah. Well, I mean, and also just for those who don't know, the big thing about Breaking Dawn is it's the first novel that and this is why there was a lot of controversy when the novel came out because. This is the first novel where Bella and Edward actually, like, physically deal with the whole sex thing. And Bella gets pregnant
spoilers.
With, whatever, with, with Edward's baby, but it's a half-vampire baby. So it literally, like, the baby starts destroying her because she's only human because Edward refuses to turn her into a vampire. And then the Jacob guy, you know, whatever his name is, the werewolf,
yeah.
He's still in the picture. And literally in Wikipedia it says that, I guess I won't say anything for the third one, but, like, Bella makes a choice between the two of them, but, like, the way that she answers is a very girly answer, which is, like, not that defiant, right, of, like, not that definitive of an answer, so Jacob's still hanging around. Shit gets crazy. Like, it does. I read that synopsis. It's not even, like, abortion-type shit is dealt with, and you're just like, Dawn is broke. Dawn is broke. And
how many pieces?
Countless. And they're going to make two movies out of it, too. And apparently, Bo Condon's in for both. So that's just like, kind of like, my ears are bleeding right now because my mind's blown.
I know.
That's like 5 years of not great Bo Condon movies that we're going to get. And I just don't. It's like,
I almost wish David Slade, because I feel like he's, you know, with Hard Candy and stuff, he can kind of give that edge. But like,
well,
Dan said,
I mean, I
wish like he almost did that, and then Bill Condon just did this one. Just
right.
Get over with it.
Seriously.
But, you know.
But hey, if there's one thing, though, that's, like, seriously, if there's one thing that Twilight has, it's, like, their turnaround time is
unreal. Oh, yeah.
Unreal.
Like, the way they're making
I actually forgot that Eclipse was coming out, and then I was, like, looking, because I was like, this summer's not going to be that good. And then I saw Eclipse was coming out, and I thought, yeah, this summer's not going to be that good.
No, but I mean,
it's really not.
Talk about, like, instant gratification in, like, this day and age, you know? Because,
yeah.
Like, even Lord of the Rings, like, had to wait, what,
a year?
Yeah.
You know, or something? Or
which,
like,
at the time, was, like, a terrific turnaround time.
I mean,
they
filmed those back-to-back. This is whole different productions happening.
Like, so, isn't it, so when did the first Twilight come out?
In 2008.
Like, in the winter,
late,
right?
Yeah.
Like, late. So, in a year and a half, we'll have three Twilight movies.
Yeah.
Like, that is half the time for three Lord of the Rings movies. Like, crazy. Yeah. I mean, I just, like, it's mind-blowing.
You gotta get it out before the buzz dies down.
If it ever does.
Apparently.
That's true. Before the next four vampire novels.
But, you know, it's probably, like, truthfully, it's probably better for like, people like Kristen Stewart, Taylor Lautner, and Robert Pattinson, because at least they'll get it almost all out of the way.
Move on.
And, like, they'll be only 25 or whatever. However
they can still get those young people roles.
Like, they can still find another franchise. Like seriously, though.
They can still be remembered for something else.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Well, I think we'll all remember Robert Pattinson for Remember Me.
Well, yeah.
Right, guys?
That's a given.
Right, guys?
Right.
Okay.
All right. Well, that about wraps up Twilight Talk.
Guys.
Forever.
Hopefully.
Dan, you're the only one that saw that movie. You know that.
Guys. Yeah.
We will not keep you too updated on Twilight, but we'll keep you a little
updated. Let's talk about Andrew Niccol.
Better filmmaker.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Actually, but you know what's funny about Andrew Niccol, and also Andrew Niccol, is that he might direct The Host. Written by Stephanie Meyer.
Wow, there's so many connections.
And I'm gonna commit suicide. And I'm gonna commit suicide.
But maybe not. Hopefully, I mean, this news story came out yesterday that he is signed on to direct I'm Mortal, which is a new sci-fi project. And
do you see what they did there? Because it's I am Mortal, so it's immortal.
Yeah.
But two words.
Wow. I actually really didn't get it when I first.
Yeah, time. Actually, didn't get it until right now.
That's awesome.
Truthfully. Really?
Yeah. Well, because I don't know. Shut up, Connor.
Okay.
You piece of crap. Why don't you go watch Nick Cage movies?
Speaking of Nick Cage, Andrew Niccol directed Lord of War, one of our favorite movies.
Yeah, underrated.
No, he also did Gattaca, which is just mind-blowing.
I love Gattaca.
Masterpiece.
And then Simone, which
I like. Actually, not really that bad. It got a lot of heat when it came out, but I mean, it's not great, but it's...
Yeah.
People don't give it enough credit.
Now, ready? This is the plot summary of I'm Mortal. Immortal. I'm Mortal. It is set in the not-too-distant future where the aging gene has been switched off. To avoid overpopulation, time has become the currency and the way people pay for luxuries and necessities. The rich can live forever while the rest try to negotiate for their immortality. The protagonist is a poor young man who comes into a fortune of time, though too late to help his mother from dying. He ends up on the run from a corrupt police force known as Timekeepers. And due to the story, all the actors in this movie are going to be under 25, because, like, the way...
Right.
Yeah.
So this is Repo Man, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But awesome.
But better.
No, wait, but how's it like
Repo Man? Well, on the run from...
On the run, the future, like, you're sort of paying a company to keep you alive.
Force Whitaker. Oh, wait, no, he's not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it sounds a lot better than Repo
Man. Oh, no, I agree.
Yeah, it sounds more interesting.
I mean, it sounds like Children of Men.
Yeah, this falls under social sci-fi that I guess are branded as new genre with District 9 and Children of Men.
District 9,
a genre sci-fi. That uses.
Sorry,
I used to.
I know it's
totally,
like
it totally. Is.
I know.
What are you
like,
talking about?
I know it is, but it's like not. Keep going.
Yeah,
it was more so.
It's the no, but it's the reason that like that's the thing about that movie. No, it's like no, I like District 9 a lot, but. I mean, it's easy to do that. Like, okay, so the aliens are the black people in South Africa, but they don't do anything more. Do you know what I mean? That's what annoys me about when people say that, like, it's a really, really important movie or something, because I really enjoyed it, but yeah, okay, prejudice. That's what it's talking about. Okay, so we're being prejudiced against aliens, just like the white South Africans are prejudiced against blacks. Okay.
Well, not even...
But they don't, like, there's no, like, in the narrative... There is literally no, like, dynamism to that part of it, right? It becomes an action movie, which is fine. It's really enjoyable film. Like, I love it. It was one of, like, my more favorite movies of the last year. But I don't like when people turn it around and they're like, oh, you know, what's trying to say about, you know, prejudice. And like, well, yeah, okay, what's trying to say?
I don't think it was that. And that didn't, because that, you're right, that's like the obvious
thing. It's like overly simple. But
when I saw the movie, it got to me, like in a good way, you know, like it got to me because it's one of those things that like, it sort of made me feel about a subject the way that movies like Crash or Babel couldn't. You know what I mean? Like, I watched those movies and I was like, yeah, they're fine. Like, okay. Like, they're fine. And they had their moments, too. Like, their intense moments and what have you. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't... Maybe it's the nerd in me. Maybe. But, like, watching District 9, like, I got angry because I was like, people in the world get treated like this.
Yeah, totally. And, like... And
horrible.
No, I know. And it does achieve that really well.
And, I mean, I think the way Wiggins... The way they show him getting into this culture is much more like
and certainly like the best part about that movie is that he is not a likable character who becomes a likable character only as he starts to transform because he becomes victimized and that's impressive. I'm just saying, you know, in a film like Children of Men or Gattaca, you know, films like this, like 2001, Moon, you know, like movies like social sci-fi, you have like. There are layers to the social breakdowns that they're dealing with. You know what I mean? Like, layers in terms of corporations, what it means to be part of the corporation, what it means, you know, in terms of Moon, or in terms of 2001, you know, like, little parts like that. Children of Men, you know, what it means to, you know, that's more of a personal, how people react, da-da-da-da, but, like, that deals a lot with rebellion, how the government was, you know, stuff like that.
And like, the value of life in general.
Right, exactly. But in District 9, I just don't think it's ever as focused as any of those movies. movies. I don't think at all. And so that's kind of why I think that it's not as important of a film as, I mean, if we're talking social sci-fi standards,
that's fair.
It's not as important as a film. So I just, that's why I was rolling my eyes when people were like, say stuff like that. But anyway, I'm mortal.
Sounds pretty good. And we're back.
Well, check out District 9, and we'd like to know your thoughts. If one of us is terribly wrong, please email us.
Oh, fuck you. I have my opinions.
Did you hear that, Jordan? Dan just said fuck you to our listeners.
I have my opinions.
Clearly.
I mean, obviously, District 9, this is not towards you, but District 9 is not on the level of other Oscar-nominated films like Blindside.
Which
deserved the win.
I had to watch 10 minutes of that movie today. I mean, yesterday. That was not a movie I ever wanted to visit.
It's definitely better than The Blind Side. Alright.
Thank God.
There it is. Okay.
Anyways, alright, so he was also attached to direct The Cross with Orlando Bloom, but that project
sounded really good, too. That sounded interesting. Yeah.
And then, like Dan said, Stephanie Meyer's the host, but nothing has been really confirmed on that. I'd love to see him do this. They said they're looking to start this summer.
Whatever happened to The City That Sailed? Remember, he wrote that, too.
Yeah. I guess.
If Will Smith ends up picking that, wouldn't that be like him? Because I don't know.
I feel like that would get more. It depends on the power to this.
But I guess Andrew Niccol wouldn't probably direct The City That Sailed. Yeah.
Now what? I mean, all these, this whole cast has to be under 25. Who would you guys want to see in Andrew Niccol sci-fi movie? Can you think of anyone?
I don't even know.
Is Andrew Garfield too?
Chloe Moretz would probably get a role at some, just for being Hit Girl.
Speaking of, this is interesting. There's a New York Times profile on her. Did you read that yesterday? It came out. Mm-hmm. It talks all about like how close her family is with her production, and like her brother is like 20. Yeah. He reads all her scripts for her and like tells her like what the best ride. It's kind of interesting.
So pretty much she makes none of her own decisions.
Well, they talk about it, but you know what I mean. It's weird.
So like, Jack's
and he's also her acting coach.
That's cool.
It's like, it's kind of interesting. And she's not allowed to see. There's a movie, that Kick-Ass was. I will look that up right now. But it was an interesting.
But she's
profile.
In Kick-Ass though.
Yeah.
She says the word cunt.
Well, no, that was interesting. Like, they only did one take of that. And her mom said because it was in the graphic novel, it's alright. And they only did one take and moved on.
Really?
Yeah, here it is.
That is really interesting, actually. Like, honestly, that's fascinating.
The Professional. The Professional, because like they compare her like character, I guess.
To Natalie Portman.
Yeah, and she goes, oh, I've never seen that film. I haven't even seen it now. I'm not allowed.
Hang on. Cunts. I've said it one more time to Chloe Moretz. I just wanted to... Okay, all right.
But it's weird. She was allowed to see Kill Bill because it was so cartoony. Like, it was so...
Yeah, I feel that.
She goes, it was hilarious. Oh, I'm killing people with real blood. It's fake. It's not like I'm killing people with real blood. It's fake. So she understands it better than...
Is it real in The Professional? I didn't realize that she killed people in that film.
Really?
Yeah.
Luke Besson. That's edgy.
That is edgy.
It's funny, because I feel like...
It's as edgy as his hair.
This 13-year-old girl is going to understand it more than most of America when Kick-Ass.
Oh, no, I agree. You know what I mean? Everybody flipped out when that was... Everyone was like, flipping. Oh, my God, she's a cunt. It's like,
flipping out.
Well, it's not. Flipping out. It's not a big deal. It's like... It's a word.
Well, it's funny, though, that her parents care about it, though. Like, one take. That's interesting. Yeah. I really did not know that. Wow.
I can't wait to see it Thursday night. We will be... All right. Let's move on. To our review of Date Night. Now, this is written and directed. Well, written by Josh Klausner.
Yep.
Who, I think we can say this is the best work both of these two fellows
have. Yes, absolutely.
Josh Klausner, who did Shrek 3 and Shrek Forever After. We have not seen
Shrek Forever After.
That's right.
Shrek 3, not good. Not a shiny.
Unless, if they use the best parts from the Forever After trailer... It still wouldn't be the best. Like, you know what I mean?
I love the Forever After trailer.
Does that have enough sci-fi?
Is that fantasy sci-fi? What is that?
If the word love meant not love, then I love the Shrek Forever After trailer.
If love meant take it down from the internet and erase it from your memory.
as a review.
And you love it.
No, and well, Tribeca, it opens Tribeca. So.
True.
So we will see.
Wow. You know what's funny? Do you know what I remember? It opened Tribeca in like its second year. Raising Helen with the keynotes and romantic comedy. It was just like one of those things where I look back and like no one saw that movie. I just remember thinking like, that opened a festival. All right. Sorry, keep going.
Sean Levy, he is the fine man behind such films as Night at the Museum and Night at the Museum Battle of the Smithsonian. And
I liked the first Night at the Museum.
I did enjoy it. And Pink Panther, the remake. And Cheaper by the Dozen.
First one, I liked the first one. Oh, yeah, Just Married, dude. I enjoyed Just Married.
Oh, dude, I did not know this. He directed Animorphs. Did you guys...
I was not a fan of that show.
Oh, that's where it came out of. He directed the sequel world of Alex Mack.
Animorphs has...
There we go.
See, Animorphs has more social sci-fi aspects than D9.
All right, and moving into our review of D9. Just no one is listening anymore.
Just kidding.
No, so this film... stars Tina Fey and Steve Carell, and a lot of guest appearances we can talk about. But the basic story is couple has two kids, right? Yeah, two kids.
They have kids.
They have just a number of children.
Yeah. They live in the New Jersey suburbs.
Yes,
they're very tired from their day jobs, and they just want to go out for a date night in Manhattan to get away from the kids and to have just do something a little different. They know a couple. Played by Kristen Wiig and Mark Ruffalo, who are splitting up, and they get a little worried by it, so they go out to, you know, clear the air, whatever. And what happens, Connor?
Shenanigans ensue. It's sort of a traditional, mix-up kind of a movie where, there's that North by Northwest moment where you raise your hand and say you're the wrong person at the wrong time, and suddenly shit goes crazy. But they end up taking a reservation for the... Triple Horns, that's what it was. I was about to say Thornhill, but that is North by Northwest. But the Triple Horns, and they have this really great dinner and whatever, and then they wind up running into Common and
The bad guy from Paul Blart Mall Cop.
It's Always Sunny.
Yeah.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. But yeah. He was also at the very end of Zodiac.
Bill Burr. Is that?
No, it is.
Anyway, they run into thugs. We'll tell you the other one's name in a second.
Jimmy Simpson. Sorry. Jimmy Simpson. Yes. Anyway.
Yeah. Thank you.
Keep going.
And they seem to be mistaken for the actual Triple Horns, who are carrying a flash drive that belongs to a mobster played by Ray Liotta named Joe Mileto. And, you know, and they're trying to get away. Shit goes crazy. And, you know, their hilarity ensues from there.
Yes. And what are initial thought? What did you guys do? Do you like this movie, Con? Do you
think it was fun? Oh, definitely. It's funny. I don't know. I mean, I think maybe upon repeat viewings, I won't like it as much as I do now. But I think it's one of those things that, like, since I was so expecting to not like it, and I actually did like it, I, like, really like it.
Yeah, know? Totally. Yeah.
And, I would actually say that, barring any other. Because as far as this year looks, as like through the summer, I could see myself getting halfway through the summer and this still being on like my top, you know, six or seven films of the year. It was enjoyable on a lot of really, even when it wasn't like laugh out loud funny. Just watching, I think watching Steve Carell and Tina Fey just together, even as a married couple, like there was something so effortlessly charming about them.
Yeah.
That I actually didn't even want when it came time where they ate at Claw, the restaurant that they go to where they get mistaken for the Triple Horns. When they're having their dinner there, it's like everything's just so nice that I was just kind of like, wow, I really don't like, you know, obviously from the trailers, you know, everything's gonna go haywire, and I was kind of like, can't they just love each other and have a nice night, because this is really pleasant.
Yeah.
But
I read after this came out, I read like a couple pages of the script, and it could have been handled so poorly. Like because when you read the script, it's not actually that funny. Like some of the dialogue is, but it's definitely has a lot to do with their performances and just little things that Steve Carell and Tina Fey add, and actually everyone in the cast. But I thought this was hilarious. Definitely one of my favorite comedies so far this year. I mean, I thought, I'm coming from the camp kind of like Connor. I thought this looked like terrible. Like
it was almost like a like a score scenario where like you have these really good actors, and you know, you bring them together, and you you know, you really want to bring people together like that for the right movie. So when I saw the trailer for this movie, I was kind of like, wow, Steve Carell and Tina Fey playing a married couple. That's really cool. In this movie? Yeah. You know, and then, and for, I mean, fortunately,
I mean, it really works. I mean, it's still, like, I don't know, I loved it, but, like, I really, like, laughed a lot, like you were saying. I feel the exact same way, though, in repeat viewings when you're not expecting it to be not that great. Maybe you'll kind of realize that it's not that great. I don't know, but it does suggest that, like, if Tina Fey and Steve Carell could be in an actually really well put together movie, how awesome that would be.
Oh, too. I would love to see them.
But I mean, but no, it definitely works. Sean Levy has always been really good about being invisible as a director. I mean that sounds like a backhanded compliment. I guess it kind of is, but I mean, as studio directors go, he kind of knows his role, it seems like. Because even in films like Night at the Museum, you know, Ben Stiller is very much allowed to just do his thing, do his Ben Stiller shtick, and all, you know, Ricky Gervais in the first movie is allowed to do his kind of comedy. And literally, it's just like a pickings, you know, like just like a kind of a buffet of like comedy, and just, you know, these great performers allowed to just go crazy. And you see as much evidence of this at the end of Date Night in the outtake reel, which would suggest that, like you said, Jordan, a lot of it was improvised and totally straight. And the editing in the movie, which is atrocious, would also suggest that, because the cuts are so mismatched, the continuity is awful, and I would imagine because no two lines are the same in two takes. So, I mean, that would be kind of the explanation for, like, you know, for the reason for that. But that doesn't really take away from the movie. It didn't really distract me too much. But,
No, I mean, I noticed it, but it was, and I don't know if this is contradictory, but, like, I noticed it, but it wasn't distracting.
No,
like, I'm having a great time, whatever. Like, if it was obvious, I mean, Sword Island we talked about, but that was to the point, but, but, like, with that, it's distracting, because you're, like, you know, you're right, following these characters.
Yeah.
Like, but with this movie, they're just, like, the jokes definitely delivered. I mean, there was a few, like, dead ones, but, I mean, the ones that hit, like we said.
Well, what we were talking about, and I think this kind of explains it really well, is in every comedy you have, obviously, you know, a trajectory of jokes throughout each scene, and so the thing about this movie is there were a lot of scenes where there are jokes in the middle of them that just don't really hit, you know. I mean, Steve Carell says something that just kind of is like, you know, or, you know, Tina Fey, or, you know, Mark Wahlberg, just someone says something that just doesn't quite work. But they always end the scene on a big joke that works. So even if in the middle of the scene you kind of weren't with it, it ends at a point where you're like, all right. And to compare the opposite of that, you go back to Cop Out, which came out a month ago. No, and I mean, the thing about Cop Out is, it's just the same kind of situation. A lot of improv, Tracy Morgan, very funny in the same show as Tina Fey, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just performing to her level in that show, I guess, too. I mean, you could argue. You know, even though he doesn't write. But anyway, and so it's just like, it's kind of a similar situation, and the problem with that movie is that even though in the middle of scenes there are things that Tracy Morgan says, and even Bruce Willis, where you're like, oh, that's funny, you know, they're like having a good time, it always ends on a down note, and you're just like, wow, like, okay. That's
just, even more the point that, like, improv in that movie, just, you can tell it just fails, like, it just doesn't work.
Right. And also, important, too, to that movie is, in terms of the editing is atrocious in that movie, too, probably for the same reasons, but the problem is, it's an action movie too, so action is always really important. Even if, and not even in a not continuity the way that you think about, like, someone grabbing to reach a door and then cutting it so that on the other frame it looks like they're opening it at the same time, but just in terms of rhythm, like the rhythm of editing. And I feel like because of the jokes, that rhythm, and also because, you know, Kevin Smith and whoever's editor is just didn't seem capable, but, you know, also because of the rhythm of the jokes and the improv, it did not, like,
didn't go well.
It's just, well, the synergy that, you know, that, like, it just,
it's like
there.
Having, I mean, comedy is one of the, it's, I mean, it's one of, I will say, I would say several genres, but I mean, like, between comedy and suspense, they're like the two mediums that are literally, like, absolutely dependent on timing. Like, timing is the lifeblood of comedy, you know, and, like, if you can't get editing down and you sort of, you fuck up that cadence, then, I mean, then you have Cop Out, you know.
Like, yeah, but the editing's bad in this movie too, though.
But here's the thing: if you have, it's, I mean, it's also like the same thing. It's like if you have people, because, like, with Cop Out, you have Tracy Morgan, right, improvising, doing his thing. Bruce Willis, who might not be able to keep up, right, who is a scripted actor,
right.
But with date night, one thing that's really fortunate is Steve Carell and Tina Fey are both extremely funny people, both very used to improvising, and they can keep up with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So in improvising, at least, and I'm you know, I would imagine that the editing would have been even worse if one of them couldn't keep up with the other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you have these two people that can kind of, like, harmonize with each other as far as their comedic timing, and it really, it keeps, it. I mean, it does, it keeps the movie going.
Yeah. And you can tell every single scene has some story. I mean, as we go on through the night, there's these characters, I mean, you could tell everyone on set is having a hell of a good time.
Oh, absolutely.
James Franco, like really William Fichtner at the end.
Oh my God.
Throughout the movie. But with Cop Out, we'll stop harping on Cop Out. Well, it should never stop you. Anyways, but you could tell no one, it didn't really look like anyone was really having a great time.
I mean, that was the other thing. It looked like also in that film, I mean, I don't know, it feels like Tina Fey and Steve Carell at least like each other on a professional level, but like even in Cow About It, you actually get the sense, and I mean, James Roeke kind of commented in his interview about this actually to Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan, right, and it got awkward that in the movie, it feels like Tracy Morgan and Bruce Willis don't like each other, and they're supposed to be 10-decade-long partners, and it's like, it just doesn't work. So, I mean, I think it's actually nice, though, that two studio comedies like this, action studio comedies, came out like this, because it really shows how, because of a couple really seemingly minuscule things, one could be a hit, and funny, and work, and people can respect it for what it is, and then another one can be like, you know, the swan song, you know, the poisonous swan song for a once great indie filmmaker, you know, who hopefully will return to form, but I mean, that's the point. It's interesting.
I mean, even we talk about action, I mean, even though in Date Night it's kind of ridiculous, that the one huge action scene.
Yeah, I mean,
the car scene,
there's only one real action scene, but it's really well done.
It's a lot of fun. I mean,
it was more engaging than, like, a lot of, like, I'm not, like, Fast and Furious, like.
Well, yeah, like, for example, if you take the opening scene in Fast and Furious, where it's, like, there's a mudslide or something.
They go underneath the car.
Literally, don't remember it at all.
Well, in this movie, it works, and it's so ridiculous, but, like, it kind of feels like if it were to happen, it would happen like that.
But, like, it also stays within the narrative. So, like, for example, during that scene in Date Night with the cars, even though it's ridiculous and it's from another movie, there are elements that keep it in the movie, like a reference to a book they're talking about earlier in the movie, and it's a funny joke. So it's like, that's funny. And, like, you know, references to the fact that they took someone else's reservations throughout, like, you know, little motifs like that, that really work, totally. What kind of people are you? So, you know, I mean, definitely, it's a smart, stupid comedy,
I mean, it's definitely, it's funny. I mean, it was, like, watching the two of them in a movie like this, it's like a nice, fluffy, screwball comedy. It's almost like old Hollywood status in
totally
that regard, because the
no, I read my the, review at yeah. Doris Day Rock Hudson.
Exactly. Or like a Bob Montgomery, Carol Lombard thing, you know, like it's like this really wonderful just chemistry that they have with, and I really think, like, if it wasn't them, this movie would have been just lost, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But,
totally agree.
Well, I kind of want to talk just about some of the supporting actors. So if you haven't seen the movie, go see it. I mean, I would say a good rental, even go out for a date.
Absolutely.
I mean, I feel like this movie, I mean, it did do really well this weekend comparatively to what we thought. But,
it did really well, but
check it out. But so coming up, spoilers. All right. One of my favorite aspects, James Franco and Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Mark Wahlberg, he has no shirt on most of the movie, and one of the most hilarious parts. First, he has this high tech machine that there's a line that he got from Radio Shack, but not. I love that dialogue exchange there.
Yeah.
And then he has to locate a cell phone card, and the way I would feel like in a movie like Naked Gun, which I just saw recently, or another movie like this would almost make fun of it, but I've never actually seen someone make fun of this, because we've seen it in every action movie that's come out in the last 10 years. But when people, like in 24 or something, when people go on and they're enlarging maps and trying to find something.
Enhance.
And there's a funny online joke with CSI on that, but in a movie. And there's just this multitude of noise that just piles on this, like, computer, like,
like,
and it's just adding up and adding up and adding up, and then it's like, alright.
But dude, like, and it's like Enemy of the State, I think, yeah. it was like the mother, the first and like mother of all of those movies, where it's like Seth Green, Jack Black, Jamie Kennedy, and like all these guys were like, we're located, and he dropped the bug, he's in the tunnel. I was like, how do you fucking know that? Like, what, the satellites have fucking HD cameras on them with like the best zoom lens in the world? But yeah, no, and this movie totally makes fun of him.
There's a running joke of Mark Wahlberg in a shirt.
And not wearing a shirt, because he's like ripped. Right?
And all we'll say is they used the F word the best they could have in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. It's a PG-13.
They're one F word.
They saved their F bomb, and Steve Carell delivers it. Pitch perfectly.
Now, what about, you want to talk about James Franco and Mila Kunis?
Probably, maybe the best scene in the movie.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely the best scene.
James Franco and Mila Kunis are the actual triple horns that were supposed to have, you know, that reservation that Steve Carell and Tina Fey took. And so they decide to, Carell and Fey decide to go to them to, you know, figure shit out and see, you know, if they could get them to go to Ray Liotta and work everything out. And just in the whole sequence, I mean, that there was that running joke with the reservation, like, that you took a reservation? What kind of people are you? Like, that in all of this, that's the thing? That's, like, the most important thing? But even beyond that, like, then they start, you know, Franco says that they should just evacuate, and he initiates what they call the two-minute drill. And he makes, the movie makes several film references. This was probably the best one, though. He says to Mila Kunis, he says, nothing you can't walk away from in 30 seconds flat. Bobby De Niro, Heat, classic! And it's just like, because he says the line, like the 30 seconds line, and I'm like, wait, that was from, and then 2 seconds later, he references Bobby De Niro and Heat, and I thought
it almost reminded me of the scene in Pop Express when he's trying to gather his things, they're trying to get out of the park.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's equally as funny as that scene.
Absolutely.
But, I don't know, we can talk. I mean, William Fichtner at the end is just so amazing.
Oh, yeah. William Fichtner, bro. 15-minute Fichtner.
Yeah. If you don't know him, he is...
The Fichtner factor.
The Fichtner factor.
Yeah.
If you have a studio film that just needs that extra kick, get the fig. If you need a kick, get the fig. I think that's in the back of his business card.
Now, someone said online, I was hearing that the third act of the movie, or like the last probably 15 minutes, it feels kind of like a rated R movie. Like they go to the strip club, and like it's really kind of
It was almost there.
I can't wait for the unrated cut.
You think
they're just to come out on DVD? No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't know. No, I mean, not really. I don't know. It's like, because it's like Steve Carell and Tina Fey doing it, so it's
like ridiculous. And there's a scene where like they dance, and that in any other comedy, I was thinking, oh wow, this could go so horribly wrong if it wasn't like that.
I mean,
it wasn't funny.
That scene was funny. I thought it went on like a little too long, 3 minutes too long.
The end of the scene is funny,
but I mean, you know, I mean, definitely, I personally think that the last 15 minutes are the least funny.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, like once it gets to where, but like a lot of movies. Like a lot of movies like that, where the plot is just kind of the, you know, schematics for something that's a lot more, right? So it's like the plot's not integral to the story. When you have to conclude the plot that no one really cares about anyway, it's kind of, that's when it's going to be the least funny, because it's almost like you have to do a job, like, okay, let's finish the movie.
So it's not having fun.
It's like, all right, let's tie it up. But so that's, you know, that's how I feel about that. But I mean, still, definitely worth watching. And then, Steve Carell has, like, not a well-written line at the end, I don't think, to Tina Fey about how he'd choose her every time. I thought it, like, did not ring true at all.
I actually really liked that, and I was...
Really?
At the end of it, it works, but, like, he says how... Like, I don't know. Just, like, the way he says, like, I'd pick you, and, like...
If we had to do it again or something, I'd
pick you. Because he goes, I'd do it again. And it's supposed to, like, he delivers it like, oh, you do it again? Like, you'd marry me and have kids with me again? That's good to know. Like, my reaction was like, if I was his wife and he said to me, I'd do it again, I'd be like, you fucking, A, you do it again.
Well, no, but I mean, given the conflict that they were kind of having.
I'm
going to disagree with you.
I'm on the side with that scene.
Because
the timing of the scene, I mean, because it ends, hang on, let me just finish arguing. It ends nice. I choose you every time. That's a nice way to end it. But I just feel like it takes too long to get to that part of it, so that by the time we got to that, I was just kind of like, wow, that line just wasn't as... I don't know, like, in a movie that doesn't, that has no basis in realism, like, why not have, like, a nice line? Like, I don't know, it just didn't seem like enough.
I mean, I thought that scene overall was really nice. Like, they're sitting there and they're eating, like, it was just a really nice, light, like,
on, like, yeah,
dessert kind of scene. Because I didn't really like the climax of the movie. It was plot that didn't matter. But like that from that scene on, I don't know. Like I really liked it. It was just nice and light. And then like she comes to the other side of the booth.
This is what I like to call a tied up screenplay where they bring in like these little elements and then throughout the movie like
But it's so nice. You're just like
no, it is nice. No, it's nice. No, I liked it. But like it's just funny. It's just like so self-aware. It's like I love it. Like they're sitting in the same booth because they're making fun of people who did that before. It's so cute.
And if you don't know what we're referencing, earlier in the movie when they talk about, you know, they're sitting at dinner and they're just kind of bitter because they're looking at other couples who are very much in love and they're like, oh, they're sitting in the same side of the booth. Like, how do you even talk to somebody like that? Yada yada yada. And then when Tina Fey sits in the same booth as him, it's just kind of like, oh, you guys are young and in love again. That's so cool and cute and awesome.
It's like, I just said that. I agree.
Yeah, no, okay.
I agree. Yeah.
Now, there wasn't a lot of social sci-fi in this movie. In that.
Wait, this movie was about apartheid.
That's
right? Right? Guys,
all right. Okay. All right. No, I could use a little more. But, no, I agree with you guys. I had a great time. So much more surprised than I was surprised.
I definitely, like, I actually, not only would I watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, I want to watch it again. Just to make sure, like, of how I feel about it.
There's a lot of first-time things related to Sean Levy. First time I ever got emotional in a Sean Levy movie, and the first time I'd watch one again.
Well, there you go. And there you go.
So check it out. Check out Day Night.
Yeah, actually, and I, like, strongly encourage, for those of you out there, find a date and go to date night, because it's perfect.
Even as we were talking about this, like, our parents, I told my parents, I called them, I said, go see this movie, like, you'll love it, and, yeah, anyone that likes that NBC Thursday Night lineup will like it.
Absolutely.
I'm like, cop out? No, yeah. Well, alright, so, that wraps up our date night review.
What did you think, out of 10, Jordan?
Out of 10, I actually give it an 8 out of 10. Constant laughs for comedy.
I'd go with like a 7.5 rank. Dan just nods.
Dan is the alien to our Vicus right now.
He's the alien to our Cowboys, actually.
Alright, well, Connor, do you want to talk about next week's movie?
Oh, Kick-Ass.
Well, we just mentioned him at the end. Death at a Funeral is coming out next weekend, which I'll be seeing. Probably see it, right, Dan? Alright, and then Kick-Ass, which we're all seeing. Dan's not going to join the podcast next week, because it's just going to be me and Connor, since his larynx broke.
Clearly, he has no voice box.
Alright, well, I mean, I hope...
Dan Mecca left the room, actually. He's not here.
He's going to go rewatch District 9, and then come back next week with his revised thoughts on the movie.
He also actually, just before he left, he whispered in my ear how much he hates all Nick Cage movies.
No, but Connor, they're predicting next week that Death at the Funeral and Kick-Ass are actually close, tracking box office-wise.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think they both have audiences, and they both, you know, so I think they could both revenue behind them. But, I mean, I would say Kick-Ass, but maybe I'm just biased because I'm looking forward to it more.
Yeah, they finally released after 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, it'll be 3 weeks now that it's been released in the UK. They finally released the numbers, like, for what it's done so far, and it's made more than, like, Kill Bill and Inglourious Basterds at that time.
Well, then there you go. You're gonna have the violent movie, comic book, hyper-stylized crowd.
I feel like no one in the U.S. is that excited for it, though. I don't know, everyone I talked to is kind of like...
I still feel like people, I mean, I don't think, and, I mean, I don't think that people really know who Matthew Vaughn is, number one, definitely. Right? I mean,
well, Stardust did not.
Exactly, and I mean, like, if this was Guy Ritchie's Kick-Ass, people would be like, oh, man, right? And it's like...
Well, only after Sherlock Holmes.
Exactly. But, Yeah, and I mean, and there's no you have Nick Cage, but given his recent track record, that's not necessarily going to draw people to the movie.
No.
You know, although I said that in last week's podcast, I'll say it again, that this is probably the first Nick Cage movie that I am, like, excited to see him in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think they'll have that going against them, but I mean, I think anybody who's watched the trailers...
The trailers, I think like Lionsgate is kind of marketing us as like this kind of teen comedy that's kind of funny, but I've heard like it's ultra violent and like they're not really.
Oh, I mean the volume one of the novel. Yeah, it had a little bit of like the teen stuff in it, but yeah. About halfway through it, like switches over into. It's funny. It almost reminded me of like a really violent, like Spider-Man, like the first.
Yeah,
Spider-Man,
exactly. Movie, that's
except,
the whole...
except a lot more violent, you know, yeah. And. So, I mean, and that obviously had, like, teen movie elements to it, too. But, so, who knows? I mean, I think... I have my money's on Kick-Ass.
Let's hope. We'll be seeing it. We'll be back next week. Maybe not Dan, but definitely Connor and I will be back. Death at a Funeral and Kick-Ass will be coming back. So, thanks for listening. Have a good night. She's tired of dying. Sick of these lies. She's suffered here for far too many years of her life. I'm feeling